Hello everyone. This is a sharing between myself, Franklin Sills, Michael Shea, and Michael Kern about the nature of biodynamics.
And the three of us are holding a meeting today, and we're talking about what is biodynamics. And of course, it's easy to look at a lot of books and see all the books that have been published. So each of us are coming up with perhaps a condensed version of what is biodynamics, or I guess what does it mean to me individually and the group of students that I teach, and not only the students that I teach, but the clients that I work with. For me, biodynamics is first and foremost a study of perception. So I know in my own personal relationships, as I've gone through life and my own personal studies, that this field, as I entered into it, first with cranial sacral therapy and then gradually the biodynamic paradigm, the biodynamic aspect has allowed me into a deeper level of perception, particularly of the value of slowness, the value of stillness, both at a biological level and at a real-time relational level, right into the intimacy of my marriage and how valuable that is. And the other piece for me is that the biodynamics allows me to study what is healing. That's another huge question, but the investigation of the healing process, and I think first and foremost in the healing process, is just the nature of wholeness and feeling whole. And in my own particular history, I know that was a promise in many of the early trainings I took in the 70s and 80s, that wholeness was always discussed. It was always talked about. But I never early on got an embodied sense of it. It was just a theory. And biodynamic practice allows me now to take it out of the domain of theory into a living reality in my own body and an interconnectedness with the space around me, the people around me, and the entire world of nature. And so that's an ongoing, fluctuating, rhythmic relationship. And the wholeness dynamic for me is foundational to the biodynamic concept in general, and the living reality of it in the body and in our whole relationship. So that's to me the starting point of where I would begin a discussion of what is biodynamics.
Yeah, I think that's really beautiful, and there's this real shift. Certainly, I see in the trainings and myself over the years and people around me from seeing separateness to really being with the whole and seeing what is within me is also within the other. And what is supporting me at the depth of my being is also present, supporting all things. And that is that shift in perception to presence and mindfulness and presence in relationship. And for me, as we settle in there, one of the important aspects of biodynamics is the nature of our holistic perceptual field, just as you were sharing, and also our ability to develop perceptual nuances in that field. Mm-hmm. So we begin to be aware of the nature of what Dr. Sutherland called primary respiration, the nature of its expression as a supportive primary principle in life, how that unfolds, feels within, until we manifest as a physical form. So in biodynamics, we start to help people orient to the nature of primary respiration, of what Sutherland called the tide, the long tide in biodynamics, the expression of that in an embodied way in terms of what Sutherland called potency and the fluidide, and how cells and tissues as a whole are organized from those deep forces within the embryological formation of a human being, which is present just now, moment to moment to moment. those same forces of life that ignite at conception, that support me and supported me in my development, are continuing to support me in my development. And in client work, it's that deepening into that perceptual relational field such that resonance to resonance, being to being, as we settle, that supportive function comes to the forefront. As Sutherland said, that we orient to the health and the conditions then emerge and clarify within the context of health. And that's one of the key functions in biodynamics.
I just want to, well, thank Franklin. Thank you, that's beautiful. And Michael also, Michael Shea. And also just to say what a delight it is, and just a joy, a privilege to be sharing these ideas and to be sharing this day with you to exchange our experiences around biodynamics. And I love both of your descriptions and would pick up on a couple of things there. I also see an orientation to wholeness as being absolutely fundamental. And Franklin, you picked up how one of the tenets of the work is really to orient to the health. And in my view, we're probably talking about the same thing here. Certainly in the Latin language, the word whole and the word health derive from exactly the same root. So intrinsically, to be whole is to be health. To look for the health is to look for wholeness. Mm. And for me, one of the beautiful things that I came across that has supported me in my practice and my teaching and in my life, when I came across it many years ago, is the notion that health is never lost. That just as you can never lose your wholeness, there's never a time that we can't be whole. There are many times where we may not experience that wholeness or feel fragmented in relationship to that wholeness, but it's the same principle. This is who we really are. We are whole. We are health. This isn't something that the practitioner has to do something in order to make this happen, but it's about finding a variety. I think biodynamics is about finding a variety, not only one, but a variety of skillful ways to help this, help us to come back into some direct relationship with our health and wholeness that is never lost.
Mm. And in following that, it'd be interesting just to have just a little discussion about, you know, healing process. All systems, and even in biodynamics, we talk about healing and how healing happens. And I think especially the association with slowness and stillness as being the foundational principles for the healing process, and how the healing process can begin to unfold in an hour. It's like an old Native American teacher of mine once looked at my diary, my book, and he said, "So you book 1 hour appointments, and it all happens in 1 hour, does it?" And he was laughing, because healing processes really unfold over time. And how do we be with the client, knowing that there's an unfoldment over time, and at the same time, there's a therapeutic process because of the way we are with our hands. And I think the way we are with our hands in biodynamic practice is different. All manual therapies have different ways of working with their hands. A friend of mine in America just uses the term willing hands. And I like the sense of transparent hands. Mm-hmm. But Sutherland said at the end, as he developed this biodynamic model at the end of his life, that reverence and respect are really an essential component of the work. Mm-hmm. And how that comes across, on the one hand, is our own demeanor, being mindful and the perceptual processes. But it also has to do with our hands, the respect and the reverence that we have with our hands. And for me, I like to use the word transparent, that we allow that slow tide, that primary respiration, to really move through our hands, so that our hands don't create a barrier, don't create resistance in the healing process. So it's a beautiful, beautiful unfolding, especially with our hands.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's this whole shift, really, within the cranial field, which from a mindset which was about analysis, motion testing, figuring out what is happening, what to do, to a beautiful mindset where we have this wide perceptual field where our hands are transparent. That's beautiful. And on the deeper level, we are transparent, you know, because my thought can get in the way, just as my intention can get in the way. And when Sutherland, at the end of his life, said, use no force from without whatsoever, let the unerring potency do the work, he meant it. And so there's been, for myself, a huge journey over the years from a mind that is very comfortable in analysis to a mind that can let go into the present moment and receive and be received. And that's, and so there's also a shift in craniosacral therapy in this paradigm from doing to a place of receiving and being, and really trusting the innate forces to come through and do the healing. And so that's, you see that shift in every level of approach. Mm-hmm. And transparent hands is beautiful. Transparent self is the heart of that. Yeah. So thank you.
And I think also one of the things that has evolved within this work over the last, probably the last 30, 40, even 50, 60 years, has been the awareness of the kind of states and the kinds of conditions that allow these deeper forces to be able to come through, allow them to gain expression. And I think the experience is that many of us have been having in the field is that it's not in the doing and it's not in the activity and it's not in the action that these deeper therapeutic processes arise. It's with some relationship to settling and stillness, which brings us to the question that, or the point that Michael Shea brought up, is the importance of helping to slow things down. Well, you know, why is that important? It's because it's only within that those states of settling and slowing that we are actually able to access the deeper therapeutic forces, the embryological organizing forces, and also we could say the things that are the realm or the dimensions that are underpinning all of those forces, the realm of stillness, of spaciousness, which is at the core of everything. So slowing down both physiologically as well as psychologically is an integral part of being able to realign to those core levels of our being and to the core levels of health. And I think there's been a great now there's been a kind of more and more of an understanding now within this field and a number of skillful means that have been developed by practitioners around the world to support us both as practitioners and as patients, as clients, to do that. And so it's very exciting field of practice to be. Kind of feels like we're getting closer to understanding. I'm sure we're a long way off still, but getting closer to understanding the source of healing.
That just reminds me of an old song that some of the words were, getting closer yet so far away. I can't remember what that song was.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because the biodynamic paradigm is not really a fixed model per se, because we really don't focus on the mechanical issues, and actually every treatment has a different component to it, and we have to be ready for that, almost that novelty. And for me, what's interesting, and I'd be curious to hear both of you respond to this, having been putting my hands on people for about 35 years, the human body of the contemporary client is radically different than the body I worked on 35 years ago. And so I think the biodynamic paradigm is an answer to a contemporary situation in terms of dealing with an extremely complex and very often complex metabolic problems that the contemporary client is dealing with. And the beauty of the original osteopathic model was that reciprocal nature of structure and function. And for me, biodynamic practice allows us to shift away from the intensity of the structural problems that are so now rooted in a metabolic problem. And we have the ability to work functionally with, let's say, fluid flows, with just slowing processes down, sensing larger movement patterns. And so that functionality allows us in the biodynamic paradigm to really augment or support healing processes.
Yeah, and you know, I think for me, the heart of that is a shift in the practitioner's orientation from effects to origins. So the structural issues, the psychoemotional issues for that matter, are effects of history we're still carrying and forces we're still carrying from that history. And for me, the shift is holding the effects within the deeper forces of life, within the fields that support us from the time of conception, and they're still present now. And there's some powerful interchanges we sense between the stillness, prime respiration, and form that we were talking earlier, Dr. Becker called rhythmic balance interchange, right. That deep exchange and interchange when our hands are transparent and we are transparent and we're holding the whole between stillness, prime respiration, potency, and form, mm-hmm. that you can feel vibrating as a vibrant stillness. And that exchange of present time supportive forces allows structure and function to start to reorient to those forces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this I think biodynamics is a very unique way into orienting to the structure function relationship. As we know, from in some of the old days, the orientation was to very much work through body structure. You would, can find ways of adjusting body structure, and function can change as a response, as a way of kind of working with that continuum, with that relationship. And I think what biodynamics has brought is an understanding of the importance of function, but not just function in terms of physical, physiological function, but the function of forces that are at play, the function of inertial forces, the function of biodynamic forces, forces of health. And that if we can work with, create the conditions for that allow greater expression of these forces, these underlying forces of health and organization, the structure automatically responds. We don't have to pull tissues, we don't have to manipulate and do things to people's bodies, because it is incredible what can happen when the forces at play have an opportunity to resolve. And so for me, this is also one of the unique features of biodynamics. It's looking at the expression of forces within the form and using that as our primary interface.
Right. There's a deep appreciation and understanding with that form is an expression of forces at work, and that right from the beginning, from conception onwards, as our form was generated within fluid fields, there were forces at play, primary forces, primary respiration, primary organizing principles at play, which are still present now. And if we can hold the particulars, the structure, function, the inertial issues, the pain and suffering within the context of those forces, then something else can happen. It's like Dr. Becker says, he listens for something else, a change in the potency, a change in the expression of forces within the system. And you know, that also brings me to that deep territory which Michael Shea started with, really, which is about the nature of presence and relationship. For that person to feel safe enough and trusting enough to let go in our relational field, in our transparency,
right.
what can emerge are all the issues there about the woundedness of relationship.
Right.
And so that relational presence and settling and that process of compassionate resonance and receptivity, where we're really acknowledging, receiving, and unconditionally accepting that person, which is some of our basic needs from conception onwards, to feel safe in relationship in this world. If we can hold that intention of receptivity, of relational resonance, then that person can settle into a space where there's a potential for them to settle out of their suffering, where the forces start to come into play and to help deal with the suffering in the stillness.
Right.
And that's the beauty of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think very often that's the key, Franklin. I mean, it's, you know, yes, you know, sometimes we can literally come out of that suffering, and sometimes it just gives us the capacity to deal with the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
It puts us in touch with whatever we could say, the resources or the... the sense of okayness, so that even within the suffering we can still be in health, be in our
right.
wholeness.
I think Dr. Becker mentioned that also, because he said, leave my primary lesion alone.
Leave it alone.
So, I mean, we recognize the suffering, we see the symptoms, we have an intake form. It's an incredible resume of pain and suffering now, when people really begin talking about the origin of their pain and suffering and why they're there. And yet, developmentally, what we're saying here is that sometimes, you know, people need that, because that's their orientation for a deeper psycho-spiritual development in their own life that we don't really know that much about. I mean, in one way, it's none of our business. So we have to leave that huge complex that we see so vividly and we can feel so vividly. But we have to return to the whole for those ordering forces to offer support for that. Because I think the Sutherland comment on the unerring potency is, and I've heard and believe, that we don't know where primary respiration,
absolutely,
these forces are going to go.
Absolutely.
They may go towards the symptoms or they may not.
Absolutely.
But we get to observe it.
We can never know. And this is something that, boy, many years ago I got out of work with people in the suffering. I can never know what needs to happen. Indeed, if I get into analysis and doing whatever I do with that and then apply a technique, that person may actually need that inertial issue, that inertial fulcrum, those forces to maintain integrity,
right,
and safety. Mm-hmm. And so the beautiful thing in the biodynamic approach is that we can really be in that state of unknowing and trust, and just as Sutherland said, trust the tide. And the incredible thing clinically is just watching the unfolding of a process that I could have never,
mm-hmm,
never mentally worked out,
mm-hmm,
through analysis, through whatever, motion testing, through whatever I do to the tissues, whatever I ask the person. In the stillness, things emerge in a precise sequence of healing process that I could never have thought of or analyzed, and yet I can be present in awe,
mm-hmm,
and in witnessing the unfolding of that. And I think that's one of the most primary shifts in biodynamics, to an appreciation that primary respiration and the forces hold within them what Dr. Becker called the inherent treatment plan, a
right.
knowledge of what needs to happen,
right,
which I can never know through my mentality,
right,
that I have to be there. And yet our role is to become a container, a safe container, where the system can deepen, the person can let go, and those forces could come into play in wonder, really.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this I think is also where transparency comes in, because we need to, in some ways, get out of the
mm-hmm.
way
mm-hmm.
In order to be able to orient to those deeper organizing forces,
mm-hmm.
to that, you know, this is what Dr. Sutherland called the intelligence with a capital I, which is far beyond our own human mentality. And And it is, it's really something that we can listen for, you know. It's about really letting go. I mean, it's talking about, you know, we sometimes talk about how we ask our clients to let go, but you know, boy, have we got to let go too.
That's the starting point.
And let go, but in a kind of a grounded way, in an embodied way. Because as you say, Franklin, I mean, we don't know what needs to happen. We can't predict what needs to come next. But you know, this knowledge that there is something there that does know, was actually a huge relief to me when I first had this introduced, because it actually in many ways took the pressure away from me that I had to somehow try and figure out what to do next with my client.
Absolutely.
Which was most often than not just flailing around, you know, in the dark, and sometimes getting lucky and sometimes not. But the notion that there is something that knows is quite extraordinary. You know, the notion that there is some kind of basic ordering principle that is at play here is both perhaps at the same time disconcerting, because it requires us to be able to listen for it and orient to it, but at the same time deeply reassuring.
It's a great relief. I mean, my heart's going, and it's welling up. What a joy and what a relief to have the perceptual experience of the supportive forces of life, which are a sacred presence.
Yes.
You know, and just being able to let go and trust in the clinical situation is extraordinary.
What else can you do in the presence of something which is far more intelligent than you? You know, other than hold a sacred respect. How else could you approach that in any way that could be in any shape or form useful or effective?
But it comes back to what you were saying earlier. In order to know that, you have to let go, and that's scary for other people.
That's right.
Because it means letting go of Franklinness, letting go of everything I know, letting go of my need to make things better or do things, or
Well, that begs the question then, you know, what are we doing? And I like the Greek definition of the word therapist. It comes from the Greek therapoi, meaning the manager of the therapeutic container. But in that case, it meant the manager of the healing temple, in which the client that was stricken with a disorder or a disease came in and was in the presence of the sacred or the divine that incubated the healing response in the client. But the therapist's job was to manage the container. Manage the perceptual process, but manage the whole. You know, the room, the relationship. It's a lot of work. Biodynamics is a lot of work, staying out of the way of that sacred presence, but yet creating a container that's safe enough for it to happen.
That's it.
So that we give the client, as the Dalai Lama said, the gift of non-fright, non-fear.
That's beautiful.
It's amazing.
And just to kind of bring it together in a way, I think one of the main shifts on a practical level clinically in biodynamics is a shift away from biomechanics and a mechanical orientation, mechanical view of life, to a very dynamic, biodynamic view where there is a direct relationship to those ordering forces. So there's a real shift in mental set. It's not just about what I'm doing or not doing, but it's a shift in how I am in myself and how I'm perceiving and what I'm open to. It's a real mental set that's shifting. And I you know, in the early years, I tried to teach a training course that was part biomechanical and part of biodynamic, things are in transition, and you can't do that. You because it's a shift in mentality and a shift in appreciation.
Right.
And it's just a powerful edge that's there. And one other thing that I'm resonating with what you said, Michael Kern, there's this beautiful thing from the Buddha where he talks about the nature of citta. And citta is usually translated as mind, but it also means this, that stream of consciousness, which is life. And he said at the core of citta, there is knowing. And at the core of citta, there is health. This is in his own words. And he said that that citta, that quality of consciousness of mind at the core of my being, is inherently luminous and free. But that freedom becomes obscured as we meet the conditions of life and take on the self and take on the conditions. And the beautiful thing in our work is that we're returning to that inherent luminosity and freedom,
mm-hmm.
that all of conditions are suspended and supported in.
Right.
And as we resonate with that, something else comes through that's about health and healing. Yeah.
Would you say, in relation to citta and what you just said, that's compassion?
That's the root of compassion.
Right.
And the extraordinary experience that I know we have all had is that when we enter that space, it's a heart space.
Right.
And we feel our hearts resonating and being touched by the other in ways that have nothing to do with my personality, my Franklinness.
Mm-hmm.
There's that direct attunement, that knowing on so many levels. It's happening through our neurobiology, but there's a deeper attunement, as far as I can tell,
mm-hmm.
at that level of knowingness, a level of consciousness itself. And that's amazingly beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.